Welcome to episode 128 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read The Flash, Rogue War by Geoff Johns. And now, the cast begins. All right, Flash Fact, everybody. This is another episode of Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name's Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week we read Rogue War. Nice little Flash trade paperback written by Geoff Johns with art from Howard Porter, Justiano. Oh, there's no other name with that. It's just Justiano. Stephen Cummings and Peter Snejbjerg.
That sounds Scandinavian.
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty sure it is. So yeah, this one, I'm sorry if you guys couldn't find it. I happen to have the singles, but I know this trade was a bitch to find because it's been out of print, and for some reason they're just not reprinting it.
Which is, I think, a horrible idea because I think Geoff Johns' anything would probably sell pretty well. I know I would buy these trades if they were available.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this was on Comixology, right?
No, it was not.
No? Okay.
So this particular... So I was going to get it from Comixology, but they... It goes from 211 and then they skip to 231. So they skip this whole storyline.
Yay. Yeah, so I don't know. I had the singles and I lent you guys the singles, so we were able to do it with singles. I didn't read the half issue though. I did see there was an editor's note referencing the half issue, but I don't remember what it was about.
It has something to do with Mirror Masters or somebody's mission.
Okay,
rogues who's I don't think it was really relevant.
It was Trickster, the young Trickster's background, where he talks about basically what a douchebag he is. Okay. And then we actually find out that he's allied with Mirror Master and everyone, and that Captain Boomerang is trying to do something, but it hasn't been revealed yet. We get to see Flash and... James Jesse talk about their FBI bullshit. Oh, and then the end was actually the only relevant part, I would argue, because Zoom comes in and he's like, Linda, I'm coming for you. Like, literally, he says it like that, too. So that's the synopsis of the half issue.
Okay. You know, I'm glad we got both of the... I'm glad we got Reverse Flash and Professor Zoom in here, because I think they're two of my favorite Flash villains. Because they're just the right mix of fucked up and powerful enough to follow up their fucked upness.
I really don't know what to make of these two. Just, they seem... Well, Reverse Flash seems really, really stupid.
So let's... Okay, let's do them by name so that we're clear on who is who. The one that's shifted in time and has his own personal time frame is Hunter Zolomon.
And that's, he goes by just Zoom, right?
Zoom, yes. Because he's not actually a professor. And then Eobard Thawne is Professor Zoom / Reverse Flash.
Oh, okay. I mixed them up then.
And he's the one from the future, from the far future.
Yeah. Wait. Now I'm really confused. Who wants to... Okay, two questions. Who wants to, like, ruin Flash's life to make him better?
That's Zoom.
That's so Zoom. That's Hunter Zolomon.
Okay.
Who's from the present.
Oh, he's from the present. I thought he was from the future.
No, so Ashley Zolomon, who's that scientist who they were using to keep Digger Harkness alive, the Captain Boomerang 1... She is his wife.
Okay.
From the present. So they're from the present. So then Thawne, who is the Reverse Flash, is from the future.
Okay.
And his beef was with Barry.
Yeah.
I see.
And so then, like... So, you remember at the end, there was, like, when Ashley Zolomon is filling out the form, and she puts somebody's... Captain Boomerang, the young Captain Boomerang, his mother down is... Melanie Thawne. That is Professor Zoom's daughter, right, Andy?
Melanie Thawne? That gets tricky even for me.
So not only is she Captain Boomerang 2's mother, she's also Bart Allen's mother.
Okay. That explains a lot, because where did we see Captain Boomerang the Elder die?
So
Final Crisis.
Yeah. But you also, in this one, he gets pushed into the future and he loses his memory. I forget which issue it's in.
Wait, wasn't that the younger one who got stuck?
No, that was the older one.
Oh my god, this is so confusing.
And so then that lady who he meets, who's like, who are you? And he's like, I don't remember. That's Melanie Thawne.
Oh. So he had a baby in the future who exists in the present.
Well, so that, I don't know how he got to the...
Yes. We don't know how he got here.
And so I looked that up on Wikipedia because I was confused about that, and they don't know. It's not explained in continuity, I guess.
Okay, and then...
I'm trying to figure out which issue that's from.
Wait, who's... Oh, sorry. go on.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was kind of... Oh, okay, so it's 224. So what happens is, as they're, like, bouncing through time, because... So when the flashes are on...
On the treadmill?
On the treadmill, yes. And they're, like, bouncing through time, it shocks... It shoots Digger Harkness, a younger version of him. So he is... dead, kind of. So the old, fat version of him is dead.
Yes.
Okay.
The younger version, a younger version, is the one that gets zapped into the future. And then he wakes up, and Melanie's like, you just fell out of the sky. Who are you? I don't remember.
Okay.
And then they have a baby. And it turns out to be a
boomerang speedster.
Yeah. So he can throw boomerangs really fast, right?
Yes.
He can also run fast, can't he?
He can run very quickly. He's not a speedster. He's not anywhere near that. Like, Flash gets up to the speed of light, right? Quicksilver in Marvel Comics breaks, like, the speed of sound. But Quicksilver would run laps around this guy, but that doesn't mean that this guy won't run laps around almost anybody else.
Because remember, there's a scene when him and Digger meet.
Yes.
And, so that's not Final Crisis. That's Infinite. That's Infinite Crisis, isn't it? Because Final Crisis takes place after this Flash story.
Oh fucking hell!
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because it was depressing, right. And everyone died in Infinite Crisis.
Yeah, that's where is it? Infinite Crisis?
Yeah, he dies in old man dies in Infinite Crisis
because he gets shot by Tim Drake's father.
Yes.
Wait.
They kill each other. Remember.
Wait, we didn't... Did we read Infinite Crisis? We read Final Crisis, Countdown to Infinite Crisis, and Identity Crisis,
Wait,
right?
Is it... Wait, oh, man, I don't remember...
Identity Crisis.
Now I'm confused. It might be 52.
No, Identity... He dies in Identity Crisis. It's Identity Crisis.
Okay. Jesus.
Identity Crisis. Fucking hell, DC.
So...
This is why they had to reset the universe.
If Melanie
Because of Flash. Because of Jeff Johns. Jeff Johns had to reset Jeff Johns. Okay.
If Melanie Thawne is Bart Allen's mother, is this like a widely known fact?
Yes, I think it is. Because, I went to Wikipedia this morning to clear all this confusing shit up, and that apparently didn't work. But basically what happens is Bart is born, and he is the son of two speedsters.
So probably Melanie and somebody else.
Yeah. I looked it up. I can't remember now. So he ages too fast. Like, he ages faster than other people, and that's why they put him in virtual reality.
Oh, okay.
And then what ends up happening is he goes back in time, and then Wally Wally cures him of the rapid aging.
Okay.
And so that's why he's like, that's why he's okay now.
But he's like a normal kid Flash.
Oh, okay. So this all takes place in the 30th century, which is the Legion of Superheroes time frame. And so, so Bart is the son of Melanie Thawne and Don Allen, who is one of the Tornado Twins, who are the kids of Barry Allen and Iris when they are retired in the 30th century.
Aha.
Okay.
So Barry and Iris retire to the 30th century. They have two kids who are the Tornado Twins. One of them has a son with Melanie, who is a descendant of the Reverse Flash.
Okay.
And so then they have Bart.
Okay.
And then Bart, now we're caught up. So at some point, either before or after Bart is born, it's not clear, she has a son. She has Owen, who's Captain Boomerang 2, with Digger. And somehow he gets sent into the past. Somehow.
Okay. And for a long time, everyone assumed that Owen was actually Golden Glider's son, who is Cold's sister?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
We need, like, a Flash family tree going on here.
You know, I'm pretty sure they've printed one before. For exactly this reason.
Whew. Okay.
But even then, like, on a family tree, it's convoluted because of all of the future stuff. Okay. Like, the retiring to the future and all that kind of... It's confusing no matter what you do.
But yes.
Did that, like, all of this time travel, and Wally mentions it, he says time travel was Barry's thing, it's not really mine, it gives me a headache, and now we know why. But, like, it's like the cosmic treadmill, the running faster than the speed of light, like, that kind of stuff is a signature of Flash Comics. And I think Geoff Johns has a track record of bringing the nostalgia of Silver Age comics into modern stuff, and so I think that's why he's trying to bring up the time travel. Did it work for you guys, or did it just make everything fucking confusing? Like, did it create the wild ride effect, or like, oh, what's going on? I don't fucking know, but this is cool. Or was it like, seriously, what the fuck is going on right now?
Jen, you go first.
Okay, mixed feelings in that, like, it wasn't confusing in the context of the story. The plot itself I could follow, although all the, like, little tidbits of useful information I was pretty lost on. So I wouldn't say it was quite a barrier to entry. At the same time, like, I had a major plot problem with Zoom's motivation. So I was kind of like, this is really stupid. So
with Hunter Zolomon's motivation? You didn't like him?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that he's, like, psychotically fixed on Wally to the point where he's like, I need to destroy your life to make you better.
Well, I guess, so my take is that he was mad because Flash didn't save him. And so he thought, well, I need to make, it's because Wally's not a good enough hero. So I'm going to make him a better hero by making him go through tragedy, so he knows that he needs to be a better protector or something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly the logic. Like, if Wally were a better hero, he could have saved me. And the fact that he didn't save me proves that he's not a good enough hero. And people become stronger by enduring through tragedy. Like the idea of no pain, no gain. Like, if you don't get hurt, you can't overcome it. And if you never overcome it, then you never get stronger for doing so. So he wants to put Wally through that pain so that he can overcome it and become a stronger person.
That's interesting, but also, I don't know. Maybe stupid's not quite the word, but, like, incredibly creepy making your wife, or making you watch your wife miscarry over and over. Just, I really didn't like that as a plot device. There's something very distasteful about it to me.
Yes. And that, I entirely agree with that. I love the idea of Hunter Zolomon. I love that there's, like, what he does follows a perfectly logical chain with just one little break in it, you know? Like, that all kind of makes sense, only it's morally wrong. And no matter how good of a hero he was, he's only as fast as he is, and he couldn't have saved you. But forgiving that, everything else makes perfect sense, more or less.
And I think that Zolomon recognizes that that's a pretty fucked up thing.
Yeah, and I think he knows. That's the other thing that makes it interesting, is I think he has a sense of, and he realizes that what he's doing is morally wrong. But he's able to philosophically justify it.
Yeah, he thinks he's doing it for the greater good, right?
Yeah. As opposed to Eobard Thawne, who just fucking hates them. Like, you can see it in his eyes. He just is fucking crazy and fucking hates them.
Yeah, it's really...
But I agree. You don't... I think there's the logical jump of hurting another person, right? That makes it morally wrong. But I think what makes it awkward and wrong to read is that in doing so, he treats everybody around Wally almost as objects to be broken. Like his kids, like the kids didn't do anything wrong. Linda didn't do anything wrong. Like, there's no need to make Linda stronger. You know,
she had an excellent Princess Jasmine moment, where she was basically like, I am not an object to be protected.
Yeah, but she's still an object to be hurt.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's what he's really doing wrong, is he's completely ignoring her moral independence and just making her an object of his motivations on Wally. And that's what makes it all so brutally awkward and horrible. Because it's like, I kind of get it, you know? You know, you fuck them up a little bit. It's like every other TV show out there, right? Every other comic out there. Like, the heroes of the story get stronger when they train hard, lose to a villain, train even harder because they lost, and then win! And they're stronger because they train so much harder. Like, you can follow that, you know? But none of that involves the people around those heroes.
Yeah, I mean...
But I think that's part of the reason... That's one of the things that makes it more interesting. Makes Thawne a more interesting... Or not Thawne. Makes Zolomon a more interesting villain, because he knows all of Wally's secrets,
yeah,
basically. And so he... that just makes him more interesting, because, you know, that's... I think that... You know, the whole secret identity and not putting the people you love in danger is a huge theme in superhero comics.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have a hero and a villain where the identities, secret identities, don't matter.
Yeah.
At least in their relationship, right? I mean, like Joker, we read Killing Joke, and Joker paralyzes Barbara Gordon, right? But Joker doesn't know that she's Batgirl.
Yeah, he just knows it's Jim Gordon's daughter.
Yeah. Or, like... Or there's when Bane figures out that Bruce Wayne is Batman, he doesn't go after the family.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think... Go.
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's what makes him... pardon the pun, electrifying almost, when he comes into frame. Because you know that he will do those things. Like, it's great that we get the Rogue War and that we can see all these other rogues. Because when we see them, we realize, I don't think any of them would hurt Linda.
No.
I don't think any of the other rogues would hurt Linda. And so I think Hunter Zolomon plays a very important role in Flash's gallery of villains. Because he's the one who will. There's no boundaries for him.
Well, like, I don't even get the sense that the other rogues want to kill Wally.
I don't think so either. I think they just want to fuck with him.
like you said last week, Andy, it's part of the game,
mm-hmm,
to them. But the rogues aren't a real... They're not a danger to the Flash. And they're not a direct danger to the Flash's family. Indirectly, they could cause something to happen. Like, they could blow something up.
Burn up a building or some shit. Yeah.
But they're not a direct danger like Zolomon is. And it's and what's interesting, too, is it's not like a... Maybe Zolomon's going to do something bad. He's definitely going to do something bad.
Whole reason he shows up. Every time.
He's not trying to rob a bank or steal diamonds or something. He's not part of the rogues at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Flash's rogues are so much more innocent than a lot of the other heroes. I think in the first rogue profile, Mirror Master directly says, like, I just want to dress up in a goofy costume and mess with people.
Yeah.
And, like, even Cold, who seems to be the most brutal out of them, has a distinct moral code. Like, he sees Trickster hurting helpless people and animals, the homeless and dogs, right? He's tying bombs to them, and he puts a stop to it. He's like, you can't hurt innocent people. You have to focus your energies. And it's not even about hurting. It's about, like, creating brotherhood through a common enemy.
Yes. So, brotherhood's a great word, because I think the theme of family comes up a lot with the Flash family, and it comes up all the time with the rogues, how they're almost as close as family. And all of them kind of say it, you know? And I think a lot of them have fucked up family issues and fucked up father issues, and I think that the way that Captain Cold is processing whatever's in his past is by being the father.
Yeah. It's
and in order to do that, like you say, he needs a moral code. He needs to be the one who can stand up and say, this is right, this is wrong. And it can't be morally strong enough to be, like, one of the good guys, because he has to have the distinction, but he has to have that code.
Every other person that they kind of profiled, too, is distinctly missing a father figure. Like, Mirror Master never had parents. He was raised in an orphanage. We don't know anything about the young Trickster, like, obviously, he doesn't have parents who care about what he's doing.
Yeah.
God,
fucking
poor
kid. Heatwave.
Heatwave. He
my God.
His family to death, and he didn't want to. That was.
And he
so
couldn't
sad.
Stop himself.
Yeah.
That scene is done perfect.
Yeah. And then Boomerang just lost his father, so I mean, Cold is a pretty good surrogate.
So I think this also gets to sort of the cornerstone of what kind of gets me. With Geoff Johns, our author here, let me be clear. I really like Geoff Johns. I really like a lot of what he does. Like I said, that scene with Heatwave is perfect. That scene of him watching his house burn and it saying, I want to help them, I want to, but I just can't. Like, it gives you the perfect sense of where he is and how he's just lost it. He has no control over this desire. And it's also a perfect description of, like, just any kind of addiction. You know, almost any addict has that same sense. Like, I can see my world falling apart and I just have no control over myself. Like, and it's perfect. It's done perfectly. It's drawn perfectly. Like, that scene is awesome. And it shows this guy and where his tragedy is coming from. And you get the same thing with Mirror Master, too. Mirror Master is great. Like, all of that issue is awesome up until, like, the last page and a half, where suddenly you just see him doing lines of cocaine on a mirror because Mirror Master, get it? And we need gritty comics. You know? Like, that's my one thing with Geoff Johns. I really, really like him. And then there's just this thing at the end here. And it's like, there's a lot of things that you can forgive, but it's just, like, it's a comic book. You can say, drugs. He's doing drugs. Or you can say, like, have a guy in the background, like, do that thing where he's, like, pointing his thumb at a guy and whispering behind his hand and saying, hey, that guy does crack cocaine, doesn't he? You know, like, you could drop hints a million fucking ways, but no, you have to, like, do what it was almost a full page, like, a full page thing.
It was
thing.
Two pages. Like, you could, there was little panels where he's, like, setting up his lines, and then there's a full page where he's sitting on the ground.
Yeah. In the bathroom.
Taking a hit, yeah.
Like, at a certain point, it's too much. It doesn't need to be in comics. It especially, I feel, doesn't need to be in Flash. you know? But it's like, you take out these two pages, and I love that issue. I love the Heat Wave. Like, there's so much of this. I love it, except there's that one little thing where it's like, are you just trying to be, like, dark and gritty for grittiness' sake? You know? And I think we kind of get it, too, with, like Jen was saying, with, like, abortion! Like, the abortion snap that Hunter Zolomon does. Like, ha! Miscarriage! Like, come on, you couldn't just, like, have her beating her, like, have him beating her up. Like, that's horrible, too, but it's not on that other level of creepy weirdness.
I don't know. The cocaine part, I can agree with you. And I'm not saying that I think that the Sonic Boom abortion was a good thing to put in the comics, but I don't feel like that's there for the sake of, like, grittiness.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's more functional in the story.
Yeah, if you look at it from outside and you're like, okay, he's making her lose the children, right?
Yeah.
And so from the outside, that seems like it is a really bad thing. Not just it doesn't seem like it, but I feel like in the context of the story, it serves
a function for story and character because it shows you the lengths that Hunter Zolomon will go.
Yeah.
Like, this is something a lot of villains would just never do, never even consider doing. Like, Bane would never consider doing such a thing. And that man is fucking brutal.
But see, like, Bane wants to kill Batman, or beat Batman, right? That was his whole thing when he first appeared. But Zolomon doesn't want to beat Flash. He wants to make Flash the best hero he could be, at least in his mind, which is pretty twisted.
Yeah.
It's the worst way to go about this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think on the reverse, like, that does show character with Hunter Zolomon. Doing the cocaine lines in the bathroom of the Rogues Bar doesn't do anything more for Mirror Master's character. Like, we know him. We know him really well before we get to that page. Mm-hmm. We know so much about him, who he is, where he got in life, why he is who he is. We know all of that. We know this guy. We get it. He's cool. I understand Mirror Master. He's a fucked up dude, but I understand him, and I actually have empathy for him by the end of this comic. And then why the fuck do I have to see him? Like, it doesn't do anything other than, like, hey, look at this villain doing crack cocaine. You know who does crack cocaine, kids? Villains do. And it's a mirror.
Yeah, like, the interesting thing, too,
it's
about
it's so gimmicky
because, like,
it's a mirror.
Now that we talk about it some more, I feel like it actually takes away from Mirror Master's character, because we go through this whole issue where he tells us about himself, and he's so self-aware.
Yeah.
And the cocaine part just comes out of left field. I mean, I haven't read any other bit of this run, so I don't know if that is something that we should have expected.
I think at this point in John's run is when he took a break to say, I am going to set up what my rogues are like. You know, and there were a couple of vignettes, and then he did this Rogue War story to talk about what his rogues were like and what sort of people they were. And then after this in the run, they mentioned Mirror Master being an addict. But they don't ever show it again like this. Like, mentioning it's fine, because it might be... Like, he's very much into wanting to escape reality, which is why he has the mirror thing, and why he fucking dresses up in the costume and fucks around with the Flash. Like, I get all that. But, like, you know...
Yeah, you know, I actually feel like I would not enjoy, but I guess appreciate or feel like it was relevant to have a villain with a drug problem. The only problem is we've only seen it in really poorly set up situations like Arsenal or here. And I think in one of the crises, or maybe it was 52, I think maybe 52, Mirror Master comes along and there's been a battle. He finds a prone superheroine and he is about to sexually assault her. And I think that's also, like, partly the pinnacle of his cocaine addiction. Or these are vague memories, but...
I'm pretty sure that's Final Crisis.
Was it Final Crisis?
I believe so.
That seems like Morrison, yeah.
But it was just so gross seeing him do that, and I'd way rather see... Like, I'd be fine seeing him struggling with this as a problem. Maybe, you know, Cold is trying to get him out of it, and he's like, I don't want to do this, but I do. And it's just, it's like you said, Andy, you can't just have it be like, oh, this villain does drugs, and drugs are bad, kids, and they turn you into, like, a rapist. Blah. It's like, no, it's an actual problem that you need to deal with it in depth if you're going to, basically. So it is a story I would read, just not here.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like you kind of say that the reason they would do it is, you know, drugs are bad, drugs turn you into a villain and make you do these things, but the drugs didn't make him into this person. Like, you mentioned the child molestation in the notes, and that's what made him into this person. That's what made him who he is what he had to go through at that orphanage. That's the fundamental piece of his character, because the rogues don't seek out therapy, you know? Like, that's who he is. And that stuff was fucking depraved, gritty, horrible, and it was tough to read, but it had a function for the character. Like, you could rationalize it because it explains who he is, and it does it right. Like, that's who this guy is. He justified his first killing, and in that first killing, he became desensitized to it and made it right by himself. And in doing that desensitization, he brought horror upon himself by murdering his own father. Like, this guy did it to himself to the point where he has to escape reality, and that's who he is, and that's why he gets in the costume, and that's why he's Mirror Masters, because he has to escape reality. Also, drugs.
Okay, so let me make a correction about the Final Crisis appearance of Mirror Master.
All right.
So, Mirror Master does make a thing. He makes a comment about Peruvian flake. So he makes a comment about drugs. The person who makes the comment, the creepy molestation comment, is actually Dr. Light.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. That's right. Dr. Light. Of course.
Dr. Light says, "Gah!" After taking down two female superheroes, he says, "Gah! They're asking for it in these outfits."
Oh my god.
That's right. I remember we even talked about that.
I am reoffended.
And then Mirror Master actually basically says, "Come on, dude, there's a time and place for that." And he's like, I think Mirror Master actually gets a little bit skeeved out by what Dr. Light says.
Yeah.
Which, if you hang out with Captain Cold enough, makes sense.
But then Dr. Light actually, like, puts down Mirror Master for being a drug addict, so they're both twisted individuals with messed up senses of right and wrong.
Yeah, but that's why they're supervillains. One's right. Definitely more wrong than the other.
Yeah, for sure.
Doing cocaine is way better on the moral scale than being a rapist. Just my two cents there.
If you have to rate such things.
I don't think any of us, I don't think either Andy or me disagrees with you at all.
Yeah. There's other... So, I gotta say, there's a thing with Pied Piper and Trickster. They sort of have a hateful bromance that is in the Flash comics a little bit, but if you like those two characters, I would actually say go read Countdown to Final Crisis, because there's four storylines in Countdown to Final Crisis, the same way there was Countdown to Infinite Crisis, mm-hmm. only... Three of them suck, and one of them is good. And the one that's good is with Pied Piper and Trickster.
Hmm.
So if you like those two characters, it might be worth it to read those for you. Just maybe.
Do they have a relationship kind of starting or something? Or some sort of tension there? Because I know Piper is one of the first openly gay comics characters.
Piper is openly gay, very gay, and... James Jesse is very straight.
Okay.
But they have worked together a long time. They have a good professional relationship, and they trust each other outside of the professional relationship, too. But they're not quite friends.
Okay, interesting.
It's kind of like, you got to think like two police officers who are partners, but villains. That kind of dynamic is there between them.
Who also work for the FBI.
Yes. So what do we think about the actual story? Because this was a lot of issues and a shitload happened. There was a lot of story going on here.
I liked it. And even though it was a lot of issues, once we get to the meat of it, I guess so it's probably, I'd say like 218 on. No. Even 212. It was really good. The only part actually that I didn't find that interesting was 219, the issue with Cheetah. Now, I don't like Cheetah as a villain in general or as a comics character, so I was already put off by that issue when I saw her on the cover. I don't know why I don't like her. I really don't like her at all.
Just as a note, I don't... That 19's not included in the trade, I think.
No, it's not. I might have given it to you on accident then.
Oh, well, I ended
up... You didn't have
it.
To read it.
Well, so the reason it's...
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay, I read it. No?
I don't know. The trade notes say 218 to 225, but it might not have been. I might have just copied the notes and wrong.
Well, anyways, I didn't really like that issue. It's in there because it's like a crossover with the Wonder Woman comic, but it's in there because it explains how Zolomon escapes, because Cheetah breaks him out.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that issue was just like... it was like a speed bump, right?
Yeah, basically Cheetah breaks him out because she's really stupid and doesn't know how to do her homework. Cheetah feels like she would be a much more threatening villain if she had access to the Speed Force. So she breaks Hunter Zolomon out to teach her the ways of the Speed Force, except Hunter Zolomon doesn't use the Speed Force at all.
He's not a speedster.
No, he shifted in time. So basically, she breaks him out because she's fucking stupid.
That's sad.
Yeah. And so then, like, after that, the issue's just... The pace is great. Like, I couldn't put this comic down.
Yeah. Once you get into the war.
My gripe is that I actually wanted each half of the story more developed. Like, I wanted maybe two extra issues on what the rogues are doing with the FBI and kind of that rift between the two sides of them. And then an extra issue on what's going on with Flash, maybe. Or even have them be separate, fully developed storylines. Because I feel like the thing with the two Captain Boomerangs was cut off or like compacted a bit too much, and I would have liked to see more of that developed, because in the beginning they made it sound so dire, where they're talking about what the government is making these reformed rogues actually do and what the reformed rogues are making the real rogues actually do, and it was very conspiracy theory going on.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just that I think that might be kind of why this hasn't been reprinted as a trade, because it's so dependent upon backstory and knowing who these people are. I mean, it's a fun read anyway, but it's probably got a difficult barrier to entry if you don't know who these people are.
But see, that's why they should just publish all the Geoff Johns run in trades again.
Just yeah, they should print an omnibus, actually. It's probably what it is.
I would buy it.
I would too.
DC. I know you're listening. Just kidding.
I think the other thing you're speaking to, Jen, is that the balance between sort of plot and character here is a little off. I mean, we get good amounts of character. We get great amounts of character, and we get great amounts of plot and spectacle, except we don't get them intertwined together that well. Like, we get a full comic or half a comic of really, really awesome character, and then action, 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 action. And it's like, they're not interwoven in a way that makes it interesting as you read along. Like, you can't really get those things from it.
Yeah, it's a bit too lumpy, I guess you could say.
It's just a matter of pacing, really.
Yeah. Man, I really like the rogue stuff, though.
Right?
Oh, except freaking top. The stupid top needs...
No one tops the top.
I freaking hated that bit where he comes in and he's like, ooh, magic, and then... Like, that's what he did. He came in and was like, I just magicked you guys to think you were good. His motives weren't very well explained, and then he's like, now you're bad again, haha.
But and that... I love it because you might feel that way because I think you don't know Top that well. That's kind of exactly who he is. He's a guy who is very, very much on his high horse, talks down to everybody, but his ability is that he can spin. Like, and his slogan is, no one tops the top. Like, he's such on his high horse all the time, thinks that he's better than everybody, talks down to everyone, except he's the most silly. Out of everyone here, he is the most silly. But he's the one, like, the irony of his attitude and his position never strikes him.
Like, Heatwave kind of mentions that in his, like, origin story about how the top's kind of, like...
A douche.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But I get what you mean. Like, it's so random. The top shows up. Oh, no, I'm the top. I'm going to spin everything around. And like how he suddenly had this weird power that nobody ever mentioned before. And that's why they all turned good. Like, it does very much come out of nowhere.
And he died. And it just seems so anticlimactic, that villain death. I mean, I assume he'll be back, but still...
Of course he'll
well,
be back. No
it kind
of
was
that.
Because he seemed like such a badass, but then I guess to me that just goes to show you how much of a badass Captain Cold is. Because he was like, "Shut the fuck up!" and he froze him and then shattered him into a million pieces. It's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
Captain Cold is awesome.
Because he was like, they were on a team together, and Captain Cold was like, "Froze you, now you're dead." He straight up kills him, and, like, it's no big deal. He's just a... I don't know. I think that Top's death says more about Captain Cold than anybody else.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that speaks about Captain Cold is, at the end, they show you the rogues have their own private graveyard in sort of a pocket netherworld, and it's just them. The only people who get buried there are rogues. Or, like, the family of rogues. People who are inducted into the gallery because they are family. And when you see that scene of them there, the top is there. Even after what he had done, they buried the top as one of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that speaks volumes about Captain Cold, because he'll have that sort of idea of, you don't cross us. We are the rogues. And if you cross us, you cross your family. And that's treason. And so I have to kill you. You're doing dumb shit. You're fucking things up. And you're going to die. I have to kill you. But when the fight's over, you were family. You were one of us. You were included. And you will be buried the way that you're supposed to as one of us. And I think it's so weird how he has those hard lines and hard definitions. And sometimes they cross. And even when they cross, it's still clear as day for Cold.
I think a major theme here is once a rogue, always a rogue. And I think it's also really important to note that for these guys, being a rogue is not being a villain, necessarily. I mean, some of the stuff they do is incredibly villainous, but some of it just seems to be for the sake of community between them, or just to pass the time. And I find it interesting that they call themselves the Rogues, because, I mean, rogue has had different connotations over time. You can be quite the rogue and be, like, you know, a ladies' man. You can be a rogue and be a ruffian who robs people. You can be a rogue and be a jackass who kills people, right? And It does cover that spectrum. I mean, we've seen Piper do good, and we've seen Cold straight up murder a dude here, so...
But then he also protects the innocent.
Yeah. It runs a gamut.
So they're certainly a different type of supervillain, and I'm using supervillain in the general term of enemy of superhero. But they're certainly not, like you said, they're not villains like, well, any other villain, really. Because they're not trying to, like, take over the world or something. Not like, was that guy Cobra?
Yes, like last week's Cobra,
that guy
yeah.
was terrible.
But I mean, take Batman's rogues gallery. They're all sociopaths who are bent on malice and harm. And they don't even like each other very much. They're villains. They're terribly villainous people who are evil. Or, like, so sick that their sickness manifests as evil. These guys, they're clearly unwell, but they recognize that. It's like Heatwave goes to therapy, and he mentions that he goes, like, over 6 hours a day,
yeah.
right? And what was the magnetic woman's name?
Oh, God damn
I think
it.
Her name is Magenta.
Yeah, I think... So Magenta, she goes to therapy for 4 hours a day because she's trying to deal with these issues. And it's like, Heatwave, yes, he's reformed, but his whole thing is like, I want to be able to control my psychoses here. And that's very not something that anyone like the Joker or Harley Quinn or the Penguin, you know, the Riddler would ever do. They'd never try to reform. They'd never make that effort. It's just not who they are. So these guys, they're actually really not that bad. They're just kind of messed up.
Yeah, you know, and I think the word reform is one to key on there, too, because I think Heatwave, I don't know if he wanted to reform, but he did reform. I think Mirror Master would go to therapy. I don't think he'd want to reform. I think he'd still want to be Mirror Master. But I think the driving force is, like, using the same comparison, Batman's villains have given up on the goal of happiness in life. They've given up on that. They've made their goals revenge, chaos, villainy, harm. They've made those their goals. The rogues just want to be happy. That's all they want. They just want to be happy. And they think that being happy, like fucking with Flash, will make them happy. And it does. It makes a lot of them really happy. But I like that their goal, their entire reason that they are villains, quote-unquote, is to be happier people.
Because they're doing what they want to do, right? I mean, yeah. Mirror Master says that in his little origin issue, that he just wants to dress up and do hood rat stuff with his friends.
Yeah, exactly that. We've used that quote before, and it's never been more apt.
Yeah, this is, like, perfect. Mirror Master's gonna steal his grandma's car at some point.
I actually, he really, really would. I would totally see that. So, I don't have anything else to talk... Okay, wait, one last thing, and then we'll move on to the art. So, how did you guys feel about the Insta-twins?
No. Pretty gross, no.
It makes sense from a time travel standpoint. I mean, she was pregnant, she miscarried, the miscarriage didn't happen, so twins.
But...
Yeah, they rewrote history.
Would they just, like, pop into her womb like that? I think they would have just always been there.
Right, and like, I think that's where it gets weird, is because everybody's like, oh my god, you're pregnant out of nowhere. But if she had never lost the twins, wouldn't they all be like... Whatever, of course, you've been pregnant for 9 months. Duh,
yeah.
Linda.
No, not necessarily, though, because Flash, like, that would mean that Flash wouldn't necessarily know what happened, and he does know why she became instantly pregnant again.
I don't know, but he's the one that did the time traveling, so it would make sense for him to know. Right?
Guys, I don't think we're going to be able to figure out why the time travel...
I don't know, but I know some people grumble about the Insta baby thing, but I don't know.
It's kind of,
it's very flashy.
I don't have a problem with it necessarily.
And they also, in case you guys are wondering, they suffer from the same accelerated growth thing that Bart does, only not as severe.
Do they make him speedsters?
Yeah, like in 20 issues, they're like 12 years old. And I don't remember. I think they solve it by shipping them off to another dimension, where time moves at speed.
Wait, so he didn't hear like Bart, but he can't hear his own kids.
I think there's some weird anomaly. I don't know.
Or doesn't
and
want to?
I don't know. It's Flash.
I mean, if he doesn't cure them, he can ship them off to college, like, right quick, right? Not deal with any of the other things.
Yes. I mean, if you're Flash, you can educate them very quickly. So, what did you guys think of the art in this comic?
Actually, I have a question for Jen in regards to the art. What did you think of Linda's look in this comic as opposed to last week?
Did she look Asian?
She was tanned. I noticed how tanned she was, and I was like, this lady's been to the beach. But I thought it was like a lot better. I'm not sure that, like, I don't know if the comic art here is my favorite ever, but it's not bad by any means. At least racial depictions are accurate.
Yeah, I'm of a similar mind. There are a lot of times when it gets really fucking frantic and crazy and you can't really necessarily follow where the action is going. But I think that works for this comic because when you have a dozen rogues out in the street fighting and just fighting each other and not giving a shit about the buildings or what's around them, like, it's going to be chaotic. Your eye wouldn't be able to follow that battle. You wouldn't be able to trace it. It makes perfect fucking sense that you would be like, what the fuck is going on here?
Totally. I agree. I don't know what else to say. No. I will say that I absolutely love the cover of 224. The one where Zolomon is, where they're on the cosmic treadmill and Flash and Zoom are fighting. It's a great cover.
Oh. I have one complaint about the art. One major complaint.
All right.
On the younger trickster, when they zoom in on his gloves, the word yo is just written all over them.
Yeah.
And that is the worst character design I've ever seen.
See, I think it's perfect. I think he's done so badly on purpose that it's perfect. Like, he has a fucking Walkman. Not even like an iPod or some shit. He has like a Walkman with his headphones on. He has earpieces in all the time. Every single time you ever see him, he's wearing his headphones. And it's like the perfect image of what, like, your grandparents would think when they think, damn kids. And it's done so over the top and stupid that you instantly understand why everybody fucking hates him just by looking at him. He doesn't have to open his mouth. He doesn't have to say a single thing or do a single thing. Just looking at him, you understand why everybody's fucking annoyed with him and hates this kid.
If I never have to see a stereotype of an adolescent kid from the 90s again in my life, I will die happy.
But this isn't the 90s. This came out in 2006.
I know, but he's the 90s kid stereotype.
I know, and that's
why. Plaid pants.
But think about
that's
it.
That's why I think it's perfect.
The reason why it's so, you can't think of, like, his costume wasn't designed. I mean, his costume was designed by Geoff Johns. Well, probably not Geoff Johns, but in the storyline, he created his own costume. So some, like, he's kind of like not a bro, because we didn't really have bros then, not in the same way we have bros today.
The 90s bro.
But that's why he has like the yo. He's kind of, I know, Andy, like, I know this was from 2006, but he's almost like an early 90s kid, like a Vanilla Ice type character.
Yeah.
Yes.
Horrible.
Yes. Exactly, on purpose, because in 2005, you would look at that person and be annoyed with them.
Right. But so he,
like, because 90s comics were annoying, and so when you see this guy, you're annoyed. And it's,
I totally agree with you. I really do.
Okay. I guess, you know, people,
it's horrible, and I don't want to look at it. I entirely agree with you. I would never want to see this character again, which means it's done right.
Talk about offensive comics art all the time with depictions of women and boob windows and short shorts and bulging muscles with men and everything like that. I can live with all of that, but 90s comics art that focuses on 90s character design? No, I'm offended. I will remain offended. I hate it so much. And that is my rant.
Alright. Fair enough. You guys ready to rate this?
Yeah.
I think so.
Alright, Jen, you go first.
Okay, I liked this, and I also had problems with it, because it was confusing a lot of the time, and not noob-friendly, one could say. I wanted more story development in terms of the rogues, and a little less, maybe a little less Zoom weirdness going on there, at least a better explanation of what was actually happening, because that part was actually pretty confusing, and it took rereading it a couple times to really get a good grasp of who was doing what when. So, yeah, I would say 3.5. It was enjoyable, and I really liked the start of this. I thought it ended well, but near the end there was some muddiness that was kind of confusing to me, so that brought it down a bit.
All right. How about you, David?
I will also give this a 3.5. I enjoyed this as well. I didn't feel the same sense of this, like, high barrier to entry, but I also feel like I'm pretty comfortable jumping into a comic midway and then going back or forward and figuring stuff out at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of agree with Jen. There's a lot of characters in this that we don't get much background on, and it's kind of jarring because we do get really in-depth background on Heatwave and Mirror Master, and then all of a sudden we're thrown in with these other characters, and Zoom is kind of confusing. But I felt like the pacing was really good. I like the rogues a lot, and getting them all together, even though it can be a little jarring, was a lot of fun. I felt this, and I think that's my, if I had to describe this with this trade with a single word, it would be fun. Despite the fact that there is, you know, hypersonic, sonic boom abortions in the comic, it was really fun, especially the parts with the rogues, and then you get a lot of things that are closely associated with Flash, like, you know, you get a lot of the speedsters, you get a lot of the Flash family, even though for some of them it's just cameos. You get the cosmic treadmill.
Yep.
I love the idea of the cosmic treadmill.
So corny and beautiful.
Yeah. And you get Barry. You get Barry in this too. So, this is a good comic. It's not perfect. It has its faults and stuff, but it's definitely a lot of fun. And if you feel like you're an experienced comic reader, well, that's not fair to say. If you don't have a problem with the lack of some explanation, then this is a good Flash story for a first one, I think.
That's a good way to put it.
Because I don't want to say, because I was going to say that if you're an experienced comic reader, then you'd probably be okay, but Jen is an experienced comic reader. So
confusing.
Yeah. So if you can get over the fact that you'll be missing out on some explanation, then this is okay.
All right. I am going to give this a 3.5 as well. I thought about it for a second because I know last week I gave the comic a 3.5. And I think this week is a little bit better. Except, I don't know. I agree with Jen a lot. I think it's things with pacing. And like the balance between character and action. And that the rogues are great. I love seeing the character behind the rogues. I don't know if I like a whole issue on it. Because I think maybe if he didn't give Geoff Johns 24 pages to talk about Mirror Master and gave him maybe 20, you wouldn't have gotten the scene with the drugs in the bathroom. I don't know. Maybe if he needs to write a tighter story, he doesn't feel like he needs to tack on, oh, and by the way, he does drugs. I don't know, But then when we get to the action, it's just action, 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 character. Action, 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 character. Action, action, action. And it feels like the story and the idea of the quote-unquote rogue war take a hard left turn when Hunter Zolomon shows up. Which makes sense, because anytime Hunter Zolomon shows up, you should lose your shit. Because that guy will fuck things up. Like, that makes sense. Except, I really wanted to see the rest of the rogue war. The rogues are fighting, they see Zoom show up and go, oh fuck, man, what are we in for? Like, even they get that sense of, okay, wait, what? And, like, the fight kind of ends, you know? And it just, I want to see the resolution of that rogue war with the rogues, and we get the scene with the top being buried, and yeah, there's all that, except the best part of this comic is the rogues. And we get the rogues, and then it takes the hard left turn. I'm like, yeah, this is great. I love this Professor Zoom story, but this isn't what I was, like, rolling along with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it takes that turn, and just, I don't know. So three and a half. But like you said, David, it's a damn fun comic to read. If you want to take that left turn with Geoff Johns and just go on the Professor Zoom thing, it's a great story. Like, if you're fine going through that roller coaster ride, awesome. Make that shit happen.
I get a sense that all Flash comics are going to be at least a little bit fun.
Yeah.
And
I mean, they have to be.
And that's why I haven't read that much Flash, and I really, really want to read more. Even before we decided we were going to do this arc, I was trying to find these Geoff Johns trades, and they're fucking impossible to find.
I have more of these singles if you would like them.
I will probably have to borrow them from you.
All right.
Because I really like this. I like this stuff.
Yeah, I really love Wally a lot. Which is kind of why we're talking about what we're going to do next week. Next week we're going to do Flash Rebirth, where they get rid of Wally and bring back Barry Allen as the primary Flash in the DC Universe. It's a six-issue miniseries. The miniseries, I think, was 2011, or the trade was 2011. I think it might have been the trade came out in 2011. That's also written by Geoff Johns. That's what we're going to do next week. We have stuff lined up for the week after that, and the week after that. And if you want to know what we get coming up from the pipeline, go to www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, hits on future shows, and boom, it is all right there. And if there's something that's not there, that should be there, and that's not on our past episode thing either, like there's a comic you really want us to read that fucking kicks ass, email us and let us know what that comic is. At?
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Trying to mix it up that time.
Nice. And as always, you can talk to us on things like facebook.com/APSupercast or twitter.com/APSupercast. Plus, if you want to make sure that you get the episode every single week, you don't want to, like, go to the website, click download, find the file, open it up, listen to it, transfer to your phone, you just subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Beautiful. That's the way it's done, folks.
Snap.
Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.